the sign of the Flying Red Horse. It's the famous sign of the 45,000 mobile gas and mobile oil dealers throughout the United States and Canada who bring you information, please. Wake up, America. Time to stump the experts. You know, any of you who want to stump our experts, just send your questions to Information Please, Radio City, New York 20, New York. If we use your question, mobile gas and mobile oil will send you $10 in war stamps and a copy of the Britannica World Atlas. If we muff your question, you get a $100 war bond and a set of the Encyclopedia Britannica. If the experts miss all three parts, you get a $500 war bond instead of the regular $100 bond. Information, Please, is presented under the supervision of Dan Golenpaul. And now, our master of ceremonies, Clifton Fadiman.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Tonight, our two anchor men, John Kieran and Franklin P. Adams, welcome as their guests, first, our old friend, the novelist and critic, Christopher Morley, and second, the new commissioner of the New York Athletic Commission, Lieutenant Colonel Edward Egan. Among other things, Mr. Morley and Colonel Egan have in common is the fact that they are both Rhodes Scholars. Not at the moment, of course, former Rhodes Scholars. Now, ladies and gentlemen, a special announcement. It's our ordinary practice, as you know, to furnish a news headline at the end of the program. And tonight, we shall forego this. We ask you instead to stay tuned to the very end of the show. At 10 o'clock, Eastern Wartime, NBC will bring you a special program from the Philippines, a special broadcast by General Douglas MacArthur. Now, spontaneous and unrehearsed as ever, Information Please starts its proceedings with a question from Mary Alice Giannetti of Pasadena, California. And Miss Giannetti wants you to get 2 out of 3 on this. It's a simple question. Identify these characters, real or imaginary. This one composed a ballad while he fought a duel. Composed a ballad while fighting a duel, Mr. Adams.
Cyrano de Bergerac.
That's quite right. Any idea why he did that? Seemed an odd thing to do.
He was a Frenchman and wrote in French forms, the ballad being one of which.
I'll take that. Monsieur, anything to add to that?
Monsieur? But it made very good timing for his rapier.
Yes, if you've ever seen
that line as he went in and then thinking the next line as he came out.
That's quite right. Quite natural, too, to do that while dueling. Mr. Kieran.
But the real reason he did it was because the Comte de Valverde, with whom he was quarreling, called him a poet in a sneering tone. That was a low-down occupation, being a poet. And he said, yes, I'm such a poet that I will compose a ballad as I carve you up.
Yes,
and he did.
And did so. Quite right. Now, who hummed a two-step while boxing? Hummed a two-step while boxing, Colonel Egan.
That was Jack Dempsey.
Why did he do that?
Well, he did it to keep his muscles in rhythm.
Yes.
It just happened I once heard him hum that while he let the ceiling fall upon my head while he was doing it.
You mean you were boxing with him?
That's right.
Were you really? How'd you make out? Oh, don't tell us.
Well, he had to have his nose operated on afterwards.
Who whistled the song Mighty Like a Rose while plotting a murder? Now, this is an imaginary character. Whistled Mighty Like a Rose while plotting a murder. If I tell you that it's from a film, that'll make it even worse, Mr. Adams, for you, wouldn't it?
Impossible.
Well, it's in the film Night Must Fall. Danny the bellhop, who was played and played very well, as I remember, by Robert Montgomery, hummed that while plotting a murder. It made the plotting of the murder seem even more sinister because he sang this lovely lyrical song. Well, that gives us 2 out of 3 and sends us on to this one from Senor Curl of Cincinnati, Ohio. Get 2 out of 3, too. I'm going to give you some famous maxims or proverbs or sayings. I'm going to give you the first part. You finish them for me. Always box a fighter. And how does that go on? Always box a fighter. Colonel Egan, do you know that?
Always fight a boxer.
Yes, that's right. Who was responsible for that formula?
I think that goes back to some John Kieran days.
By the way, Colonel...
Sounds like Benjamin Franklin to me.
I have no idea, by the way, who is responsible for it. Which technique did you use with Mr. Dempsey, Colonel?
I think I used the boxing technique.
Used the boxing.
He being the fighter.
I see. Now, here's another maxim that begins, "The difficult, we do at once." And it continues, "The difficult, we do at once." Mr. Morley.
The impossible takes a little time.
That's quite right. And it's the motto of what group, do you know?
Well, it might well be the United States Marine Corps.
Yes, it might very well be it. Actually, Colonel Egan, do you know?
It's in the Air Transport Command.
The Air Force motto. I believe some others have taken it for their motto and probably applies equally well. The impossible takes a little longer. You can always tell a Harvard man. How does that go on, Mr. Adams?
But you can't tell him much.
It's remarkable how much truth there is concealed in these tiny little lines, Mr. Adams. Look, that one, of course, is made up by a Yale man. Here is a question from Sol Gelb of New York. Get 2 out of 3. What have the following in common? Napoleon and Justinian have something in common. Mr. Colonel Egan.
They both had codes of law drafted. That is the Code Napoleon and the
Code Justinian. Yes, that's quite right. Yes, the Justinian Roman Code, the Napoleonic Code for France. Now, Alexander II and Abraham Lincoln had something in common. Mr. Kieran, what was that?
They were both assassinated.
I'm not sure that Alexander II was assassinated.
I think he was.
Who assassinated him?
Well, I couldn't pronounce the name if I knew it, but I don't even know it.
Gee, we need Rathoff tonight.
One of the Alexanders was. A very tall man.
Colonel Egan?
Didn't they both emancipate people?
Yes. That's quite
Alexander
right.
emancipated the serfs of Russia.
Yes.
And Lincoln the millions of slaves.
Yes. You're much too modest about your knowledge, Colonel Egan. You never get anywhere on this program. By the way, do you know when the Russian serfs were emancipated? About what time? What year, approximately? We know that Lincoln emancipated the slaves in 1863, January 1st. Colonel Egan, care to guess?
Well, I'd guess...
Well,
it was prior to the Russian Revolution in 1905, around about...
Well, it was considerably before. There was in 1861. So these two emancipations were within the same decade. How about... The two people, Godoy, that's G-O-D-O-Y, and Pasteur had something in common. Godoy and Pasteur. Mr. Kieran.
They both fought Joe Louis twice.
How'd they make out?
Well, I think Godoy lasted, and Pasteur was knocked out in the second bout.
Was Godoy ever knocked out?
I don't remember whether he finished the second bout or not. He was a punching bag for most of it.
Colonel Egan, can you refresh Mr. Kieran's otherwise infallible memory?
Well, the Pasteur bout lasted to the 11th round when he was knocked out by Lewis. And I think Godoy in the second bout was knocked out as well.
That's right. In other words, they were both KO'd in the second bout, and they both went the limit in the first. And both... lost to Joe Louis. Well, that gives us 2.5 out of 3 and sends us on to this one. For Mrs. Clinton V. Black, Halfway Tree, Jamaica, British West Indies. Very picturesque address. Quote, 3 different lines, gentlemen, that mention terms or words that a real estate agent or landlord might use in connection with his business. Any word or phrase that... might be used in the real estate business. Give us a line of poetry. Mr. Adams?
Line of poetry?
Oh, well.
Wait a little.
Mr. Morley, while Mr. Adams is thinking
I was thinking of he rent his garments.
He rent his garments? That's not a quotation, actually, is it?
Well, it's from the Bible, isn't it?
The word rent is used, yes. Yeah. I don't know whether that's the exact phrasing. Mr. Adams?
The least said, the soonest mended.
The least, yes. I'll take that on sufferance, Mr. Adams. Colonel Egan?
Be it ever so humble, there's no place like home.
Yes, I'll take that, Mr. Kieran.
So you want to rent the envious Casco, maybe?
Yes, there's another rent that gives us 2 rents. There's a friend in need is a friend indeed. Mr. Adams?
It takes a heap of living to make a house a home.
Did you just think that up, Mr.
I just
Adams?
Thought it
That's
up
a beautiful
by
line.
Edgar Guest.
Beautiful line.
It takes a heap of money to make a house a home.
Don't it, though? And now a message from our mobile expert, Ben Grauer.
On his historic expedition to the South Pole in 1928, Sir Hubert Wilkins discovered many new land formations and bodies of water. You can see their names on the Navy's official chart of the Antarctic. One of them is Mobile Oil Bay, which Sir Hubert Wilkins named in honor of the motor oil which helped keep his machines running smoothly. Yes, Mobile Oil, fine oil that it is, never let him down. Remember that about Mobile Oil. It never lets you down. Even under today's extremely tough driving conditions, fresh Mobile Oil helps keep your motor running right, safe from harmful wear. That's how Mobile Oil helps lengthen the life of your car and stretch your gas ration. If you've ever asked the question, how can I get the best out of this old car of mine? You'll find the answer in Mobile Oil, world's largest selling motor oil. Drive in tomorrow at the sign of the Flying Red Horse.
And now, gentlemen, a question from Wanda Blank of West Forest Hills, New York. Again, a 2 out of 3 question. Can you identify these military units, each of which is named for the ladies? The first is Alice Kilpatrick's Cavalry. Can you identify Alice Kilpatrick's Cavalry? Mr. Morley.
Alice Kilpatrick was the wife of General Judson Kilpatrick of the Confederate States of America, and he wore her blue corsage ribbons on his on the flag staff of his pennant.
That's quite right, Mr. Morley. You didn't just make that up, did you? Perfectly right, yes. Alice was the general's wife. It was a... What kind of regiment was it? What arm of the...
It was a cavalry.
A cavalry. Perhaps you said that. Now, how about Princess Pat's regiment? That was named after Colonel Egan.
That was named after Princess Pat in the last war.
Yes, and what country?
In England.
Yes, and what country...
Of course, it was a Canadian...
Canadian, yes.
Unit.
A light infantry regiment. As a matter of fact, is it not operating in this war?
I think it is.
Yes,
it's in this
winning
war
distinction in this war as it did in the last. And third, ladies from hell. Ladies from hell. Mr. Kieran.
Well, those are the Highland Scott regiments wearing the kilts.
Yes, it's a particular one, though, Mr. Kieran. Mr. Morley?
I think it's the Cameronian Highlanders, isn't it?
Well, it may be called that. It's the 51st Highland Division of the British Army. And, of course, its exploits in the last war have now become legend. It includes a number of regiments that go all the way back to the 18th century. It's a very fine and long
The only way
tradition.
To get their goat is to tell them that their slip is showing.
Gentlemen, try this from Stanley Ruttenberg of Pittsburgh. And, oh, this isn't very hard. Let's get all on this. With what famous heavyweight champion do you associate these training methods, which are now commonplace? That is, they kind of began these training methods and other folks use them now. This one practiced skipping rope and punching a light bag. Mr. Adams.
Philadelphia Jack O'Brien.
Would that be right, Colonel Egan?
Well, I'd go back before that. I think James J. Corbett.
Going back before Adams is a feat in itself.
Well, that's what they used to do on the stage, give an imitation of Philadelphia Jack O'Brien.
Skipping
punching
the
bag.
Rope. Seems to me that's right, and punching a bag. Seems
skipping
to me
a rope 10,000 consecutive times.
Consecutive times. But I think the Colonel is right. It was Jim Corbett that popularized that. Mr. Morley, do you have anything to add to that?
I was going to say that none of them skipped the rope with such grace as Carpentier did. Because he used to do it out in Manhasset, Long Island.
You saw him doing that?
Watching.
Mm-hmm. How about one who practiced with his right hand tied up in order to perfect his left hand? A good trick. Practice, Mr. Kieran?
Never heard of it, but if it was practicing, it sounds like Gene Tunney to me.
Colonel, I won't take that as an answer. I gather that's just a tentative stab in the dark. Colonel Egan, would you like to take a try at that one? Right hand tied up?
I heard that Gene Tunney did do that. I mean, he told me himself that he did it when he was young, but he didn't do it when he was champion.
Mr. Kieran, again?
It was some story that one champion did that, but he didn't do it willingly, that his manager tied up his right hand.
Why?
And that was
that?
Jack Kearns tied up Dempsey's right hand in order to make him perfect his left.
Yes, well, that's the answer that I was trying to get at. It was Jack Dempsey. It doesn't say anything here about his being willing to do it.
You haven't any affidavits to go with that.
No, but I'll accept that answer. Now, who practiced circling backwards away from an opponent? Colonel Egan.
That was Gene Tunney. He practiced going backwards so that in case he would be knocked down, he'd know exactly what to do until he got his senses back.
Yes.
And he did that out in Chicago during the seventh round, the long count.
Yes, it was very turned out to be, on the whole,
very good strategy.
Well, that gives us only 2 out of 3 on account of good old Philadelphia Jack O'Brien, Frank. And that means that mobile dealers send $100 in war bonds to Mr. Ruttenberg and a set of the Britannica, and that sends us on to this question from William H. Tiedemann of Richmond Hill, New York. This, again, is a 3 out of 3 question. Can you give me a common English expression derived from the Latin meaning? Now, the English would be, the first one, with praise. What would the Latin be? Colonel Egan.
Cum laude.
Cum laude, yes. And where would you find that?
Usually on a degree after successful completion of a college course.
Yes, so extra successful completion. It's used especially on diplomas, of course. Now, the English phrase, the order being changed, would correspond to what Latin phrase, Mr. Morley?
Vice versa.
Vice versa, yes. Change around. Versa, of course, means turn or change. At pleasure, or as one wishes, would recall what Latin phrase, Mr. Adams?
Ad lib.
Ad lib. Considering that you've been supported by ad lib for years, I'm glad that you knew that. Here's one from Emily Zimmerman of South Orange, New Jersey. Get 2 out of 3. It's a literary question, gentlemen. In what novel or play does a character pretend to be dead for these reasons? In the first case, he pretends to be dead in order to save his life in battle. Mr. Kieran?
Falstaff.
In
Henry IV.
Yes. Which part?
The Battle of Shrewsbury.
Battle of Shrewsbury. You remember the act and scene? And
no, I can't
remember. Remember what the page
that
looked like? In what novel or play, this is a novel, does a character pretend to be dead to free his wife so that she can marry someone else? Is that clear? Colonel Egan. I'm glad you follow me, Colonel Egan.
Well, isn't that, she'd already married somebody else? In Enoch Arden?
No, she already had in that case. And he didn't pretend to be dead to free her, did he, in Enoch Arden? He just sort of stayed away a long time.
Stayed away when he saw that she was married.
It's not exactly the same situation. Well, the one I'm thinking of is Tolstoy's story Redemption, in which Fedya, who is the character, makes it appear that he's drowned himself because he lacks the courage to do it and he's unwilling to go through with a divorce. And in the end, by the way, he really commits suicide. Are you following this, Adams? To free his wife from a charge of bigamy? Perfectly clear, isn't it? Okay. Now, in what novel or play does a character pretend to be dead in order to get rid of his enemies? Mr. Morley.
Brer Rabbit frequently did it in Uncle Remus's stories.
By golly, that is right. Of course he did. It's a very good answer, yeah. Played dead. I'll take that. There are some others.
There's also a story by Joseph Conrad called Gaspar Ruiz, I think, in which the character had in front of the firing squad pretends to be dead.
That sounds reasonable. And one of your favorite characters, as a matter of fact. In fact, your favorite character.
Sherlock Holmes. Dying detective.
Yes, you're quite right. And there are several others. Mr. Kieran, one of your favorite characters pretended to be dead in order to get rid of his enemies. The Count of Monte Cristo. Did he not?
Count of Monte Cristo?
Well, Edmond Dantes. Remember, he's tied up in a sack and thrown to the sea as if he were a corpse?
Oh, no.
No? Go ahead, argue with me.
He didn't pretend to be dead at all.
No? Go ahead.
He was imitating it. He took the place of a corpse.
Yeah.
He was very much alive and came out and got after the fellows who put him in there, and he fixed their clocks.
Well, didn't he make believe that he was dead, though, in order to...
Well, he was in the jail for 14 years. They all thought he was dead.
Yes. Well, that's enough pretense of being dead. How much do you want? 14 years ought to be enough. And now a word from our mobile expert, Ben Grauer.
You know, Berlin and Tokyo would like the answer to the new gasoline magic that's become one of America's deadliest weapons. We call it flying horsepower, the most powerful aviation fuel ever developed. It helps give our fighting planes amazing climbing speeds, lightning takeoffs, helps those big B-29s fly farther, carry bigger bomb loads. Behind this flying horsepower stand $90 million of work and material in building the world's greatest catalytic cracking development. But this is far more than a wartime aviation story. Because after victory, there'll be a remarkable new mobile gas that will bring flying horsepower to your car. A whole new driving experience is waiting for you. You'll know the feel of new power, instant car response, flash getaway. Yes, after war needs end, this sensational new mobile gas will give your car flying horsepower at the sign of the flying red horse.
Now, gentlemen, how about trying this one? It comes from Jack P. Warner of Boston, and he wants you to get all. Why did the Americans want Schwammenau Dam? Schwammenau Dam, Mr. Morley.
They wanted to capture it before the enemy could blow it up and flood the valley of the Rohr River.
That's exactly right. Yes, it controls the Rohr River. Why do the Russians want to take Stettin, the town of Stettin? Mr. Morley again?
Well, it is the most important and strategic and available port on the Baltic.
Yes, but what port? I mean, it is the port.
Well, it's an inland port. It's at the head of a long bay and estuary, and it's a well-protected deep-water port.
Yes, quite right. It's the port for what larger city than itself, carrying the commerce of what larger city? Colonel Egan?
Probably Bremen.
Well, Berlin.
I think.
Yes, in Berlin. That's why, of course, very important for it to be captured. And why, gentlemen, do the Americans want Iwo Jima? And are on their way to getting it now. Colonel Egan?
They want it for airfields. It'll be only 750 miles to Japan from there.
Yes.
Use it as a base for B-29.
Yes, perfect. A perfect base for land-based planes to operate right over the mainland of Japan. Well, apparently that was too easy. Perhaps this one will be a little more difficult. For Mrs. Bessie McIntyre of San Antonio, Texas, get 2 out of 3. What animal might you take along with you if you went hunting for each of these animals? If you are badger hunting, what other animal might you take along to help you badger hunting? Mr. Kieran.
Well, yeah, they have badger hounds. And you could also take a dachshund.
Yes, you could.
Yes, you could take a beagle. A basset?
What is that last one? Do you know that?
Yes, from the Crossword Puzzle Sunday.
Any low-slung hound.
Particularly a dachshund.
Dachshund.
The word dachs in German, I guess, means...
Yes,
badger.
I think so.
Now, if you went tiger hunting, gentlemen, what might you take along in the way of animal equipment? To Mr. Morley.
You'd take a goat and tie him under a tree as bait for the tiger, and then you'd sit up on the platform on the tree and shoot him down.
Where did you get this picturesque...
In all Jules Verne stories.
Is that what they do, Mr. Curran?
I'd take a... First thing I'd get be an elephant.
Yes, it might be a little difficult.
And then get a howdah on top of the elephant and encase it in armor and get me a couple of 50-caliber machine guns and go looking for that tiger.
Kind of a full-dress affair, this tiger hunting, isn't it?
Well, isn't that the animal that you would get?
It's the animal that I would get if you got it first, Mr. Yeah. Kieran, sure. Yes, an elephant, although I kind of like Mr. Morley's idea.
They always use either a goat or a kid as bait to allure them.
Yeah, that seems reasonable. Colonel Egan?
They also use a dead ox. Put the dead ox there, and when it's been there for about 5 days, the tiger will come around quite often.
I should think he'd know about it before that time.
I see.
It's a rather insensitive tiger that needs 5 days.
Awful lot of trouble for a tiger. What do they do with the tigers then?
Disinfect them.
Now, gentlemen, suppose you were lion hunting. We've had badgers and tigers. If you were lion hunting, would you need any animals to help you hunt lions? Mr. Morley, you'd just take your lion fair-handed?
No, you take a double-barreled express. And Ernest Hemingway, if possible.
Actually,
and a shikari, I mean a
what?
A huntsman.
A huntsman. Mr. Adams?
I would use an Androcles.
An Androcles? Oh, especially trained Androcles that's friends with lions.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Well, Androcles are kind of hard to get these
things. He tames them.
Yes, he does tame them. That's true. Mr. Kieran, what non-human animal might you use? Mr. Colonel Egan.
An automobile. Very good way to get them. Just chase across the lanes, and then when you see about 17, you get out and...
Order somebody else to shoot the lion, yes. That's a most unsporting way of hunting lions. Mr. Morley?
According to Aesop, you send out a mouse. The lion's claws get very long and they irk him, and the mouse gnaws them off and makes friends with the lion. Then you creep up on him.
You know, Morley,
that's unsporting. I mean, you creep up on the mouse.
Yes,
Morley, I think you're a lion crook.
I'll take any of those answers. The one I was after was... Well, you might take along both dogs and horses. Dogs to rout out the lion, and horses, I suppose, to get close enough to where the lion is. Because they're not readily available. Well, that gives us at least 2 out of 3. Try this one for Mr. W.H. Hildreth of Minneapolis. Where in literature are these opposed or contradictory situations to be found? Get 2 out of 3. The hero breaks a spell by kissing the heroine. The heroine breaks a spell by kissing the hero. Where would you find Mr. Adams?
That sounds like the Sleeping Beauty.
Sleeping Beauty is right, yes. Prince breaks the spell by kissing her. That's quite right. In Snow White, the Disney version, the prince wakes her by a kiss from a spell. A father mistreats his children. Children mistreat their father. Where would you get the two opposing situations and what two works? Well, first, a father mistreats his children, Mr. Kieran.
Oh, I was going to give the children mistreat their father.
I'll take
King
that.
Lear.
King Lear, yes. And, Mr. Adams, how about father mistreating children? It happened.
Adams family.
Babes in the wood.
Babes in the wood? I think they are sort of left out in the cold by Pop. Well, the Barracks of Wimpole Street is perhaps a good example. Now an example of... A case where a hero gives up a career for love of a queen, and one in which a hero gives up the love of a queen, this is more improbable, for the sake of his career. Mr. Morley.
Not sure whether the sake of his career. I was thinking of The Prisoner of Zenda, where the hero gives up the queen in order to allow her husband to have her.
That's no career. That's no career. one who gives up a career for love of a queen, the most famous example, of course, is Antony and Cleopatra. And the case in which the hero gives up the queen for the sake of his career is, I should say, Aeneas. Aeneas leaves Dido in order to go on to the founding of Rome. Well, that does give us 2 out of 3. Ladies and gentlemen, a couple of weeks ago, we had a question from William F. Costa of Forest Hills, New York, in which he asked you to explain certain words in the old song, Pop Goes the Weasel. The song goes up and down the city road, in and out the eagle. That's where the money goes, Pop Goes the Weasel. We didn't have time to finish it. We got the first two parts. The city road is in London, and the eagle is a music hall in which drinks were sold on the city road. But we didn't figure out what a weasel was and what the word pop has to do with a song. Now, in the meantime, you fellows have had a chance to look it up, though I know you're honest, we don't trust you. So I'm going to tell you, Mr. Adams?
I didn't look it up, but I think a weasel is something like a tailor's goose.
Right. It's a tool used by hatters. And the word pop, well, pop is the equivalent of hawk. The weasel was often pawned on Saturday night. We're going to give the $100. Mobile dealers will give the $100 in war bonds to Mr. Costa anyway, and a set of the Britannica, and that's all we'll have time for. Mobile dealers have paid out a total of $100 in war bonds and stamps, plus the one I just mentioned, and 2 sets of the Encyclopedia Britannica. In a moment, I'll announce the guests for next week. Remember, send your questions and the correct answers to Information, Please, at Radio City, New York 20, New York. We may edit them a bit, and in case of similarity, we'll be the judges of whose question shall be used, and all questions remain our property. Thank you, Colonel Egan. Thank you, Mr. Morley, for the able cooperation this evening. Next week, in addition to Mr. Kieran and Mr. Adams, we will welcome as our guests the famous conductor, Erich Leinsdorf, and the journalist and radio commentator, Waverly Root, author of The Secret History of the War. Now an urgent appeal from 30,000 wounded men who returned to America this month.
Army hospitals in the United States desperately need nurses to care for these returning wounded men. You can help by joining a WAC hospital unit. No previous hospital experience needed.
You'll qualify if you are between 20 and 49, an American citizen, have no dependents under 14, have 2 years high school education. Join a WAC hospital company now at your nearest Army recruiting office. Tune in the experts again next Monday at this time for Information Please, which comes to you from your friendly mobile gas and mobile oil dealer at the sign of the Flying Red Horse. This is Ben Grauer bidding you good night and good driving.
Program came to you from New York. This is the National Broadcasting Company.